Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Bitcoin Banter. As usual, I have Tony with me. Rick is both sick and out of town, so not going to work. We've got Dave Birnbaum, Coinbits, with us. Dave, thank you for taking time to join us today. Let's jump right in here to the news and get some opinions. Alrighty, first up, we've got Senator Lummis tweeted out, the United States ditched the checkers and finally joined the world's chess game. So Senator Hagerty proposed the Genius Act for maintaining U.S. dollar dominance. Tony, I know you're going to have some opinions on that, but effectively it's an act for regulating stablecoin businesses, stablecoin issuers. And some of the things that it does is would institute reserve requirements, define stablecoins, all of these things. Dave, I'll let you kick this off. Tell us your thoughts on this. You like it? You don't like it? And then we'll kind of banter on it.
I haven't read the legislation, but I think it's fascinating that the overall the strategy of this administration seems to be to abandon CBDCs and go the route of strengthening the dollar through stable coins and maintaining dollar dominance that way. I honestly didn't see it coming. I've written like so many articles over the last year about how CBDCs are inevitable, because in order for the dollar to maintain its dominance, we have to update our fiat rails and our fiat technologies, and CBDCs are just like the way to do it. And so unfortunately, we're going to have this surveilled currency to deal with. And this goes a completely different direction and says, government's not great at building technology in the first place. CBDCs are super intrusive and have, you know, civil rights issues with and human rights issues. We're going to eliminate those with an EO. All the, you know, there were actually active research projects at several of the Federal Reserve banks to build a CBDC for the Federal Reserve. And they've all been disbanded now. And this is going to be replaced by the encouragement of stablecoins. So, you know, this could dramatically increase the demand for dollars. I've been thinking about this a lot and reading lately about it. The demand for dollars worldwide may well outstrip their supply. So a lot of us, you know, worry about how many dollars have been printed over the last few years. It's like 40-50% by some measures of all the dollars ever printed were only printed in the last few years. And it sounds like we're teetering on a hyperinflationary event. But in the meantime, you know, they say the dollar is the best choice in a bad neighborhood. And if everybody else in the world wants to store their wealth in dollars, they have no idea what Bitcoin is. They just want dollars. They want access to stable coins. If we can enable that and unlock that demand for our treasuries could increase. Our debt may not be a problem in the near term. I mean, it totally changes the calculus. And so I guess I'm just impressed by the ability to kind of, I guess, create this strategy. And, you know, we'll see. And I wonder what Tony thinks, because obviously we've had a lot of conversations about national currencies and devaluation. So actually, Tony, what do you think about this?
Well, I'm actually on the opposite side of what you just said. I'm not a fan of this at all, because I don't particularly want to see the lifeline of the US dollar extended. And as far as I'm concerned, stable coins are a CBDC that just hasn't been activated and weaponized yet. These are 100% programmable currencies. So, you know, and the biggest one, Tether, right now is, you know, in bed with the US government. So what's to say one day, you know, they don't get a phone call saying, well, you know, if so-and-so meets X, Y, and Z criteria, shut them down. That can easily happen. It's a 3-second process. So increasing that, you know, under the guise of CBDCs, stable coins, for me, it's murky waters. I mean, yes, you're right. You know, government's not good at building anything. So they're using something that's already sort of has like a track record in the space, which is Tether, the biggest one. But whether that's good news, I'm not entirely sure. Right now, what they're doing, they're pushing this heavily into the South, where people are in desperate needs of dollars because, you know, their situation is so dire. They just need anything to put food on the table. So under, like, superficially, if you look at it, I guess it's a good thing for them. But what's really happening is that you are keeping all these people, hook, line, and sinker, dependent on a system that has them under their foot. This is not freeing them any way, shape, or form. Bitcoin is the complete opposite of this. I mean, why do we need stable coins to extend the lifeline of any currency, be it the dollar or what have you? Bitcoin can scale. You know, we can scale Bitcoin, and that's what people should be using. Something that has zero risk of centralization, zero risk of somebody waking up one morning and deciding that, you know, you don't belong in, you know, in the monetary system anymore for whatever reason. And that, in my opinion, is what needs to be destroyed and never allowed to be put back together. How that plays out going forward, I don't know. I mean, it's not a light switch, unfortunately. But if you're looking at it superficially, I guess, you know, stable coins, maybe, I don't know. Like, I mean, there's two lenses to look to view this. I sort of view it because of my experience in more of a critical eye. I don't see this as a good thing for the reasons that I mentioned. How it actually turns out is to be seen.
Yeah, I think the first sort of aspect of my opinion is I think stable coins, I don't personally like them, but I think they're a brilliant business because, you know, to the point we've made on Bitcoin Banter a lot, there are areas of the world where, you know, like if you're living on a few dollars a day, you like having dollars is probably your best bet. Converting, you know, local currency into dollars is probably you can't materially save in Bitcoin. You're just trying to get to your next meal, get to your next day. And so I understand the value when you're not in a privileged seat, as many of us probably are. Dave, you're going to have a hard time finding anyone who is more skeptical of government than Tony and I. And so I probably tend toward Tony's opinion. While I could see a very optimistic world where, hey, great, we've sort of privatized the, you know, money, I guess, to some degree, it's still highly centralized. I'm curious if you would have concerns of, you know, Tether or any other stablecoin issuer being co-opted, because I think this feels like maybe it could be the government's sly roundabout way to achieving a CBDC.
It definitely is government sly roundabout something. So I'm a skeptic of government too, but I'm also a realist about a few things. So number one, what I've learned over the last few years, observing the rest of the international geopolitics, macroeconomics, everything that's happened, is that as bad as the US government is, we can clean it up and we have a much stronger economy than we probably even thought. And after we do, the United States and the constitutional values of the United States are probably better than most or maybe all alternatives by a huge margin. So I don't like centralized power. I don't like that Washington, D.C. is too powerful right now. But I see a path to restoring constitutional values in the United States. And by extension, the dollar remaining dominant, you know, is probably better, like I said, than most local currencies. So I guess I see it as a bridge. I mean, if you increase liquidity in crypto, right? If you make it so that most people are transacting on blockchains, even including stable coins, that just lowers the friction to obtaining Bitcoin. So you suddenly have a total addressable market that's, instead of theoretical, it becomes direct. And if there is some sort of hyperinflationary event or fast currency devaluation of the dollar, you have people have an off-ramp that they can readily use with a few taps on their smartphone, as opposed to being completely screwed by banking and, you know, ACH and all this stuff. So the more people worldwide who abandon their local currencies for dollars, probably better for them, probably better for human rights in general. Not perfect, but again, opens that gateway. The other thing is this announcement, I think it was last week, that Tether has been able to figure out how to, with Lightning Labs, they've partnered to issue stable coins using Taproot assets on the Bitcoin blockchain. I'm still digesting that, but that sounds really huge, because I think what that means is that the hash rate that's used that supports the Bitcoin network is now also going to be supporting dollars. So now in some sense, a substantial percentage of dollar transactions are settled with Nakamoto consensus, and some substantial percentage of dollar or dollar derivatives are now proof of work tokens. So I haven't even really figured out what that means, but I mean, if that continues, I wonder what you guys think. Like, is that a major check on sort of the worst impulses of those who control the dollar system? And could that blossom into something really powerful? And does it make Bitcoin more, even stronger as sort of the security budget that you would allocate to those stable coins now are actually supporting the Bitcoin network? And in some ways, Bitcoin now becomes backing to the dollar system. And, you know, you could have this medium of exchange in dollars, but you could have final settlement in Bitcoin, and maybe it just accelerates everything. I don't know what you guys think about that.
Yeah, I think my, like, for me personally, my hope is that we achieve a Bitcoin standard ultimately long term that has nothing to do with dollars. Could it sort of enforce some level of responsibility from governments in the short term, potentially? I'm not optimistic that that it will, and I don't have a necessarily a mechanism through which it wouldn't. But government seems to find a way to continue its stranglehold on the global economy and on its money printer. And it's sort of like, you know, from, like, we talk about the, you know, the gold standard being left in 71, but really it was long before that. The reason we couldn't keep our promise in 1971 is because we hadn't really fundamentally been on a gold standard for quite some time, probably since, you know, the creation of the Federal Reserve, at least since World War II. Here's the thing. I could see the optimistic case playing out as you envision it, Dave. That's not my base case, though. I think my base case is this is their sly roundabout way for continuing to propagate the dollar and enforce it as the global standard. And the sooner we get to people are not just storing Bitcoin as a store of value, but also transacting with Bitcoin directly, like, that's the means by which I think we circumvent any of these other concerns. I'd also just say, like, with this act, it seems to me like this is just my sort of my libertarian take. Like, if Tether doesn't want to have one-to-one reserves, as a private business, I don't think they should have to have one-to-one reserves. Like, I think they should, like, ethically, I think they should. But, you know, some of it too, for me, is just like, you know, the nanny state stuff rubs me the wrong way. Like, if businesses want to conduct, you know, their services in a particular way, I prefer that they do that. I think disclosure is fine, but, like, it wouldn't be the first time people got wrecked, you know, trusting a business they shouldn't have trusted. And so,
thing, man. Yeah. If you want to keep an optimistic lens, you hope that, you know, the current administration has good intentions. But what's to say that in 4 years, things don't change? And then, since the rails are already in place, somebody else comes along and just flips the switch and turns this into, like, a complete nightmare. That's where my brain is going mostly, right? So if you break the if you ensure the separation of money and state, then that's no longer a concern anyone has to worry about. And that's the future, you know, I'd like to see us head towards. We need this transition step. Who knows? I mean, we've never seen anything like this before. So this is like history in the making. But, you know, when you come from complete annihilation and destruction, you're not very forgiving about, you know, middle steps. You want to make sure that you get to the end result that you know will work once and for all forever.
Yeah. Yeah, dude. I mean, if you have any other comment on that, feel free.
We can move on. I think. Okay.
I hear where you're coming from. I think there's a reasonable optimistic take, and I think there's a reasonable pessimistic take. Maybe
sure.
is sort of the Okay, so this is a piece of news I missed. This was said like a week ago, but the DOJ argued that your money isn't actually property, so the government can take it at will. If that sounds insane, it's because it is. And maybe here, here's the other thing. Like Bitcoin or stable coins or the dollar as we know it today, you know, doesn't matter if they think that your money is not yours, which is an absolutely insane prospect. Very concerning. Now, and this is something I've been thinking about a lot. I was just talking with my brother about this, you know, that to some extent, like we think we're free because we talk about freedom all the time. Like in the United States, for example, we're land of the free, right? But I was like, really, we live in the best open air prison, because when I pay down my house, I don't really own my house. I'm paying rent to the government in the form of property taxes. And same thing with my car. And oh, I've got to get tags and a license and all. It's like, hey, as long as you stay within the rules that we set for you, yeah, you can do your little thing that you want to do. And the fact that they're saying this with money actually isn't that surprising, because it's kind of most of the important things that we have in life, like homes and vehicles and that sort of thing. Tony, I'll let you start this one. This, I'm sure this doesn't surprise you, probably frustrates you, but what's your take?
Man, what have I been predicting for the last 2 years? Didn't I tell you that the mechanics of fiat currencies, the breakdown, the collapse is not isolated to Lebanon, and this is coming everywhere? And that I predict in the US, they're going to come up with some fabricated cyber attack to justify stealing people's money or locking you out of your bank accounts. This is like a nicer, more creative way of doing it. They just cut to the chase. It's not your money. Deal with it. We're just going to take it. Right?
What percentage of people do you think are even aware of this news? Like zero. Outside of Bitcoin. Yeah, like zero. Like no one.
Nobody.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nobody. Yeah. So if they wake up tomorrow with the headlines like on some newspaper that, hey, guess what, guys? You're broke. Your money's not yours. We're taking it all. Screw you. Figure it out. Then what happens?
I mean, this isn't a policy, right? This is some lawyer in the Department of Justice making this argument. And I'll spare you the details, but I've seen some pretty absurd arguments made by lawyers who have a financial interest in a transaction. So the fact of this coming out, it's embarrassing to the Department of Justice, and the people who are involved in it should be publicly humiliated. And they should be fired. But for me, I'm not so concerned about the implications here. But frankly, simply because I already knew. And Tony, we're in complete agreement. I mean, the reason that we like Bitcoin is, at its core, it's the use of hard power to establish property claims. All of these constructs that we have around property and legal contracts, it's all a substitute for violence and for hard power, so that we don't have to engage in that all the time. We don't want to have to constantly defend the boundaries of our physical property with guns and dogs. And so we set up these contracts, right, so that we can point to those and sort of use this proxy for violent confrontation to establish claims on property. But ultimately, actually what we're doing is shifting the responsibility to use that hard power to a different group of people. Now, I don't have to police the boundaries of my home because other men with guns, I'm paying to do that with taxes and with this very elaborate code of contracts and agreements and laws and so on. And so we have sort of this, you know, distance from that world. Ultimately, though, especially in the United States, we understand that like the very foundation of property and freedom is hard power. And that's why we have the Second Amendment, the very second one. It's not like an afterthought. It's central to our culture and our understanding of natural rights. And so that's what Bitcoin is. It's money that is your claim to that property is established through hard power. It can't be taken from you because you would need to actually expend energy that would be, you know, infeasible to do in order to take it away from you. And so I'm not surprised by this at all, because of course the government owns all the money that they make because they have the hard power to back up their claim on that money. And if you would like to live in freedom, you should use money that is backed by hard power that you control.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I think what's concerning, you raise a good point, is it's not like this has been instituted into law or something. It's an observation made by an idiot at the DOJ. I think what's concerning is it's an insidious talk track, though, because it's sort of like the way we talk about like a threat to our democracy. It's like we were never intended to be a democracy. Like we are supposed to be a republic of 50 independent states that operate under a very small federal government. And we've completely gotten away with that. But if you asked 99.9% of Americans, what form of government do we have? They'd say, oh, we have a democracy. It's like, no, we have a constitutional republic. And I see the same sort of thing happening in probably many areas. But you start to talk about money is not property, is not your property. That if that gets reiterated enough times, people start to believe it, and they're like, "Oh yeah, it's just a thing I use to transact." But like, you know, it's not mine. And like, we've already been duped into believing we own our homes and we own other things that we sort of, maybe a little bit own, but not really. At the end of the day, we've got eminent domain laws. They can take your home to put up a strip mall if they want. They can tax you. Yeah, I think it's just concerning that this is even a narrative for anyone. But again, unsurprising to me. So we'll see if that's like a talking point we continue to hear into the future. Alrighty, let's talk about. So we've been talking about the Czech Republic a lot. We had we've had the. I think there was an announcement of a strategic reserve. Now they're taking some actions, no more capital gains taxes on Bitcoin after 3 years of holding. I think this is a lot more, at least in my view, this is a lot more important than a strategic reserve, because I don't really care for the government to have a strategic reserve, but for them to allow adoption to flourish because they're not punishing people for holding the best performing asset. Dave, you want to take this one first?
Sure. I mean, it's fascinating because I wrote an article for Forbes a few months ago when Donald Trump was quoted by Michael Saylor as having said that Bitcoin is money and that people shouldn't be taxed on capital gains just to be able to use it in transactions. Now, that was never independently verified beyond just Michael Saylor saying that he talked to the president and heard him say that. But that would be massive because it would unlock a lot more tech development around medium of exchange use cases, I believe. I think that there's a serious drag that on Bitcoin's use as a medium of exchange because, and a lot of Bitcoiners don't know this, okay? But if you go to like a Bitcoin meetup and there's a food cart there and you buy like a taco with Lightning, that is a taxable event, right? So it's businesses and as Bitcoiners, we don't care because we're like, well, we can just use software to track all those transactions and report them. So we don't care, you know, but for the business, they're worried about things like, well, now I have to take some of that Bitcoin, turn it into dollars. Like how long does it take for that conversion to happen? And is there a taxable event in there somewhere so they can pay their vendors, right? Because there's not a circular economy. So they're going to have to, so for us to be able to do that would be tremendously powerful for promoting Bitcoin adoption. So I think it could happen here. And the fact that Czech Republic is doing it is a great sign. They're also among the better countries in the world with respect to natural rights, not as strong as the United States, but far, you know, pretty up there. So the fact that they're leading the way, I'm not surprised and I'm super bullish on it.
Yeah, I think the one thing I think Trump is, for all of his flaws, is a contrarian. And so this is the sort of thing I could see him doing just to have like a big announcement. Time will tell. But yeah, it's, I am ready for it to be something beyond the El Salvadors and the Czech Republics of the world, you know, for like someone else to be like, hey, just use Bitcoin as money, like use Bitcoin as money. You're not, you know, we're not surveilling you. We're not taxing you on those transactions. Tony, I would be a little surprised if you're reporting your transactions, but what's your take on the Czech Republic?
Well, he essentially gave the ECB and Lagarde the middle finger because, you know, the other day she made a speech saying with all confidence that they weren't going to act on it. And here you are now, you know, with the news just to shatter that speech altogether. It's a great move. I mean, I'm not a tax lawyer. I'm not an accountant. I mean, I don't know the intricacies of all these, and I don't pretend. I never give such advice because I have no idea. But I don't understand how any of this stuff is enforceable. If you're dealing Bitcoin to Bitcoin, like, how is that a taxable event? You're not selling it to local currency first, right? You're paying for something from Bitcoin to Bitcoin, a money that doesn't belong to any government. So how do they have the right to tax something that's not even theirs in the first place? That's the part that I'm having a little bit of a hard time wrapping my head around. So when I hear these, you're exempt from taxes. But it's not yours to tax in the first place. So what are you exempting? You know, like, I mean,
yeah.
Does it sound you're trying to take advantage of people's ignorance, thinking that somehow people are just going to assume that, you know, the government has the right to tax something that doesn't belong to them? I mean, someone correct me. I'm not. This is just like how my brain is.
I think we're talking about two different things, right? Like, we're talking about two different things. So, of course, they don't have the right to. It's wrong. It's the law can be contrary to ethics and morality. And in this case, yes, the law is contrary to ethics and morality and natural rights and property rights. Like, absolutely, it's an unjust law. But the fact that they're removing that unjust law protects people from being harassed by the state, right? So it's positive because it brings, you know, Republican government, small r Republican government, more in line with natural rights, and that's always a good thing. You don't the Bitcoiners that say, like, you know, I bristle when I hear Bitcoiners on Twitter talk about how, like, it doesn't matter, like, what governments do or what the law says because Bitcoin will win. It's like, yes, but there can either be more or less disruption and pain between now and the winning, right? We can either, like, have to fight a intense bloody revolution where we lose everything and then Bitcoin wins, or it can be something that's a lot more, like, easy and less disruptive and more positive. And so when governments remove barriers to the eventuality that we all know is coming, which is universal Bitcoin standard, that's just positive because it just means there's going to be just less pain.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's a much more peaceful approach. But I've always been, like, of the mindset, if your government is giving you a headache, just leave. You know, there are other places around the world where, you know, they don't give you a hard time about these things.
Yeah, I mean, I hear you, Tony, but, you know, people have different life circumstances, right? Like, I've got friends and family here, and, like, the headache of government is worth it to be near friends and family who are not leaving anytime soon. In terms of your question about, like, how do they tax? I mean, enforceability, I think, is probably very tough, right? Like, if I go to a Bitcoin conference and I buy something on the Lightning Network, I don't know how they would ever, you know, like, they'd have to really dig deep to make that determination that that was me. And that would really only be possible with, like, KYC Bitcoin anyway. I think what it probably comes down to, and Dave, you might understand this better than I do, but it's definitional. It's, if they defined it as money, it wouldn't be a taxable event, but it's because they define it as a commodity or, you know, some sort of an investment vehicle. I assume it would have the same implications if you bought something in gold. Like, if you bought a hot dog with, you know, shavings of gold, that would probably technically be a taxable event because of how they define it. It's not legal tender. It's not money according to the government. That doesn't change the fundamental facts as to what it really is. But it's what allows them to tax you.
There's not a single definition of money and legal tender. Like, all these things are overlapping and different agencies say different things. So, but look, it's not that they're going to come knocking on your house and catch you for buying a taco with Bitcoin and not recording it. It's not that. It's that if you're a high profile person or you get into some kind, you get on the radar, and then there's a concerted effort to take you down for everything you've ever done and dig into everything you've ever done, right? That, like, it's when the eye of Sauron shines on you that you want to make sure that you don't have anything that they can get you with. Like, that's why, that's the main thing. It's not so much that the transaction itself will raise a flag, but it's like, you know, I'm out there talking about how the power of the state is unjust and so on, right? And maybe things are changing now, but for the last few years, I've basically had to resign myself to maybe I will wind up in a gulag. I don't know, but this is just the way things have to shake out.
Yeah.
And you just want to minimize your attack surface. And so by you know, doing Bitcoin transactions that you're pretty sure can't be traced, well, you're adding to attack surface there. And so if we can just eliminate the attack surface of the state on the individual, I think that's a win.
Yeah. And the other thing I'd add to this too is a Lightning a $2 Lightning transaction might be subtle so as to go undetected. But if you're buying and selling on KYC exchanges or something like that, you're probably a lot more vulnerable to being audited or, you know, someone checking into it. So there are different transaction types and mechanisms by which you can transact that are going to probably raise flags quicker than others. Good commentary. Last topic for us. So Dave, just so you know, we have this this ongoing joke on Bitcoin Banter. Everyone thinks I'm Rick, who's usually here, thinks I'm an XRP simp. I'm not. But Ripple CEO Brad Garlinghouse is reportedly expected to be appointed as an advisor to the White House Crypto Council, according to the New York Post. I have no way of verifying if this is true. I've seen pictures of Trump and Garlinghouse together. I mean, our opinion of XRP, our real opinion, all jokes aside, is it's the worst of the worst shit coins. I'm curious if you seem to be an optimist, and it's refreshing to have an optimist on the line with us. Maybe lift our spirits a bit. Does this sort of move concern you? Do you care? Do you just kind of like shrug your shoulders because, you know, Trump launched his meme coin and his sons are tweeting about buying ETH and all these things? Like, how do you sort of absorb this information?
I'm very concerned about the Trump White House and their dalliances with crypto. I don't like it at all. For Trump, I think Trump sees, you know, think about it this way, with the Trump coin and then the Melania coin, he looks at like meme coins and crypto as sort of the new version of money. He said so. He said like young people are going to use crypto instead of stocks. And like, I think him making that meme coin is sort of like him putting him and his wife like on like a banknote. You know what I mean? Benjamin Franklin appears on the $100 bill. He's putting his name, his face, and his wife's face, out of respect and love for her, on this digital banknote. And so he just sees it as that. His sons, honestly, the Eric and the Don Jr., you know, dalliances with crypto, that's very concerning. I don't like it at all. I don't like the tweet saying you should go buy ETH. That was completely absurd. You know, Eric Trump tweeted that a few days ago. Absolutely the wrong time to do that, right? Because ETH is probably dying finally. It's very concerning. This guy, what's his name?
Brad Garlinghouse. Yeah.
So I didn't know much about him. I know Ripple's a scam, obviously, but I didn't know much about him until I started looking into him last week. And you know that line from Succession, you're not serious people? This man is not serious people, okay? He's a joker and a fool. He gets into little like flame wars with people. He curses. He sounds like an absolute tool. And he doesn't have the gravitas to even be involved in these discussions. If he's able to pull the wool over the eyes of the administration with Ripple, my confidence and optimism in this administration will be utterly destroyed, because the number one problem in the first Trump term was the ability to judge character and a lack of ability to make good judgments about character and about the people that you associate with. And we are seeing with most of the nominees to the cabinet that seems to have changed, and that there is a much more sort of realistic assessment of people's character. And it takes about 5 minutes for this Garlinghouse guy, and looking at what he has said in the past and how he interacts with people, to dismiss him as a tool. And if you can't see that, there's something very, very wrong. So this has not been verified, by the way. Cointelegraph said something great. I don't know if it was leaked or if Garlinghouse is leaking it, because he seems kind of like the kind of guy who would do that in order to get ahead of things. So I don't know what's really going on there. but they have been part of this whole corrupt cabal. They have tried to accuse Bitcoin of being, you know, anti-climate, and there's just a laundry list of things. So this is an absolutely corrupt organization. I wouldn't be surprised that now that we have these tools for tracing dirty government money, I wouldn't be surprised if some of it wound up there. I'm not saying it did. I'm saying I wouldn't be surprised, because the character that these people show for themselves online really indicates very low character.
Yeah, well said. Tony, what? Yeah, I feel like we've been talking about Brad Garlinghouse a lot the last couple of weeks, but what's your thought?
No, I couldn't agree more with Dave. Dave, I couldn't have said it any better, man. You're spot on. If these people get involved with this current administration, then as far as I'm concerned, they've lost all credibility, because nothing's really going to change, right? They're going to get involved, you know, in the crypto sphere, but fundamentally their intentions are no different than what they were in the past. The whole revolution here, the whole premise, is the separation of money and state. And these guys are determined to remain in power in whatever shape, way, or form that means, right? And so if that's the case, then nothing is going to change, or at least it's going to take longer for it to change. And there has to be we have to continuously keep pushing the education to force the change, so that these rails fail. They have to fail in order for humanity to move forward. Otherwise, you know, we're just going in circles. There's no heroes. You know, politicians were never any good for humanity historically. This is no different. All they have to do now is to get out of the way, which is what I'm hoping he will do. But if they start mixing in those criminals and, you know, those corrupt people into the mix, then what you have is a cocktail of nonsense, which, in my opinion, will lead nowhere good. But again, time will tell. You know, right now we're just speculating. But I hope Trump delivers something good for America, like he intends, or at least as he stated for all these months.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Dave, any final comments, or you want to head for home?
No, this has been fantastic. Thank you for the invitation.
Yeah. Hey, why don't you give everyone a handoff? Tell people about Coinbits, where they can find you, anything else you want them to know.
Oh, sure. Yeah. So Coinbits is a Bitcoin-only on and off ramp. We have a slew of features for personal financial management for the Bitcoiner. So you're able to get your first Bitcoin. We make it as easy as possible for grandma, for mom, for anybody in your life to get their first Bitcoin. We kind of fill out that experience with personal financial management. So you can keep cash and Bitcoin on the platform. You can set target orders. You can look at your spending history and try to figure out how to save more in Bitcoin. And so, that, you know, we've been around for a few years now. We're still in startup mode, and, you can find us at coinbits.app. So coinbits.app. And I'd be really, really thrilled if your audience made an account and gave me some feedback on how they like the platform.
Terrific. Well, thank you so much for joining. For everyone listening, thank you for tuning in. Go check out Coinbits. And of course, if you need help with proper 100% self-custody of your Bitcoin, go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast. We would love to help. We also help with online privacy. We help with setup of privacy phones, Plan B residency options. Again, thebitcoinway.com/podcast. Dave, thank you so much for being here, man. I know it was kind of last minute too, so thank you for making time. And Tony, good chatting as always. Look forward to catching up soon.
Great talk, guys. Thanks.
Thank you.
Cheers, guys.
Bye.